Okay, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. A very good morning if you're just after joining us. It is 11 minutes past 10 now on Tuesday, the 4th of July, 2023. Coming up shortly, we'll have Community Garda information for you later on. Father Sean Doherty joining us for a chat as well. Like lots of you have texted in off the back of Minister Charlie McConnell's decision whether or not to participate in conversations. And it's a mix. I'll read. I have to agree with Charlie, says Helen. Sadly, I totally agree with an opinion expressed by Charlie McConnell, agree Greg, not just about his issues, but in general. I've said this to colleagues many times. Fair play to Charlie McConnell about time people took a stand against rude and biased presenting. And then there's considerably more that have a different point of view. But I don't know. I don't think I'm going to read them out because I don't want to get involved in anything. We're talking here about an issue, a real genuine issue that affects thousands and thousands of people's lives here. And that's what we do every day in this program. All I will say is this. I've read out a few of the ones that agree and I appreciate the ones that don't, but I'm not going to sit here and read them out and because it's unfair. Do you know what I mean? I don't want to be engaged in any spat, or I'm not going to use this platform, I'm not going to use this program to sit and read a load of comments critical of someone else. I just don't think that would be fair. So I've read some of the ones that are coming in that agree. I think that's fair, isn't it? And I appreciate the ones that disagree, but I'm not going to, as I say, I just don't think it's right to sit here and read them out because it's. I just don't think that would be fair on Minister McConnell, for an example. But I'll read you general comments that come in on an everyday basis. Hey, Greg, but I genuinely appreciate someone taking the phone out and going to the bother of texting. I hope you understand my reasoning, do you? Hi, Greg, we've just received the okay to... I'm a very normal, actually, very normal person. I'm not really interested in being... I genuinely try and come in here and use this platform to try and do something positive. It's not agenda driven. Anyone who knows or works around me, I presume the people that work closest with me know my political views. I'm completely apolitical. I have no political affiliation. I have no political friends. I've never benefited from anyone in any political way, shape or form. I've never done anything, been told to say or do anything for any particular reason. The only thing that's ever happened is that people have tried to stop me saying certain things particularly in the context of what's going at the moment in RTE, in very strange ways. All right, let me just put it like that there. But I don't want to get involved in anything whereby it's me or someone else that we're talking about and not the actual issues as to why I come to work every day. It's the only reason I do it anyway. Greg, we've just received the okay to demolish. Unfortunately, we cannot wait for the science on foundations because the scheme states we must start rebuilding in 18 months and it must be completed within 15 months from commencement. So they're sort of in a catch-22 there, aren't we? Aren't they? Hi, 3,200 square foot house. Our tenders have come back for our rebuild to A-rated standards without foundations as not required in previous stage two applications as 700,000 plus. Architect fees, 7K. Engineering fees from start to finish, around 30K. QS fees were quotes from 17K for a full QS, that quantity surveyor service, from start to finish. I'm in work, hence the approximate fees. We've been told our house probably won't be worth what we will pay for it when it's finished. So am I reading that correctly, that for a 3,200 square foot house, it's going to cost you 700,000 plus to rebuild? I presume that's what that's saying. Minister McConnell stated in the current on a community town hall meeting earlier this year that the sliding scale would not form part of the new revised scheme. He was adamant that the sliding scale would be abolished on the day that the new rates were announced. And it was actually the sliding scale which was formed the basis of one of myself and Minister McConnell's last conversations. Remica scheme, has there ever been clarification around how the debris from all these houses to be rebuilt is going to be dealt with? How and where will it be disposed of? There doesn't seem to be much discussion around this. Well, we actually discussed this yesterday, and that's going out to tender. And it is believed that it'll be a commercial venture, that there might be two or three companies involved, and they will be the agents for disposing of this material. That is currently ongoing at the moment. It hasn't actually been finalised or formalised, but councillors are speaking with the executive about that just as we speak. So you might expect to have two or three people that will have the licences for the transportation and disposal of this from this waste. So that's literally an up-to-date position on that question that you had there. Old age pensioners, can there be a discussion about how badly pensioners are treated in this country? In order for your pension not to be affected, you're not allowed to have more than 20,000 euro in savings. It seems that you get rewarded for squandering your money and punished for holding on to it. That's a separate issue there. Hi, Greg. Can you ask if we have applied, have application number with Donegal County Council? Will they contact homeowners? We'll try and get some clarity on that for you. I myself had stated process, but couldn't get engineer to test houses they have pulled out of first scheme. I'm now waiting for second scheme, which is now active for you. The foundation blocks of the new government are defective concrete, says the listener. Another morning, Greg. Do you know if landlords can avail of the new scheme? There is a provision in it as it relates to RTB registered properties. Bottom line is no one in government can add. Example, 231 square metres. HSC government allowance, 2,045 per metre squared, up to 180 metres squared, 368,100, 1,250 after 180 metres squared, this is the sliding scale, equals 63,750. Total, 431,850. Max grant, 420,000. Shortfall already, 11,850. Actual cost to rebuild, at least €550,000. Overall shortfall, €130,000. How is this 100% redress, they say? I just noticed that 100% redress is just not really a buzzword, or it's not really being used at the moment. I would love the harp to stay on the passport, but change cover to dark green. Yeah, that would be nice. Leave the harp alone on the passport, says another. Why don't they design a passport cover? You put your passport in, have whatever you want, and it's up to the individual if they want to waste their money. Well, you see, I suppose you have to conform internationally, don't you? And the issue being that you will see when you're at an airport, though it's a long time since I was at one, they ask you to even remove it from any case. You know, some people have some nice little covers for them, but I think you have to normally take them off, don't they? Oh, don't you? Greg, the harp's okay. We don't need to change everything for diversity. I'm not sure it's to do with diversity, because the shamrock could replace the harp, or a red squirrel could replace the harp. Those are the options that are being considered. Greg, maybe a green-coloured passport with a wee leprechaun on it would be nice. Okay, I'm not sure if you mean that or not. But anyway, I don't know what the story is. Okay. Let us take a break. We've so much to get through today, and we want to get on to Community Garda information as well too, to see what help you can offer or help on Garda Síochána. They'll be joining us with that very shortly. Stay right where you are. Stay right where we are. It's been one of those mornings. Stay right where you are. We have the bingo numbers coming up for you right now.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
It's time for NCBI Bingo on Highland Radio.
It's Tuesday, the 4th of July. You're playing on a brown coloured sheet. The reference number is S12. It's game number 27. The numbers are 84, 61, 13, 62, 27. 82, 64, 63, 58, and 65. Phone your claim to 910-48-33 before 8 p.m. tonight, leaving your name, contact number, and the name of the shop where you purchased your book. Get all your NCBI Radio Bingo information at highlandradio.com.
New this week at Home Store and More. All outdoor cushions are all half price. But better hurry, because when all the half price outdoor cushions are gone, they're gone. Also, all photo frames, all wetsuits and summer toys, and all outdoor heating are still all half price. But when all the half price photo frames, wetsuits and summer toys, and outdoor heating are gone, they're definitely gone. Drop by your local Home Store and More, or visit us online at homestoreandmore.ie. New store now open in Frascati Centre, Blackrock, Dublin. Home Store and More. A happy home.
Hi, Paddy here at Shane Connolly Cars in Donegal Town. Are you looking to upgrade your car? With Shane Connolly Cars, you'll find makes and models for every budget. Great finance options, and we also accept trade-ins. Check out shaneconnollycars.com or call into us at Shane Connolly Cars from Lonaher Road, Donegal Town.
All men's wedding suits packages are now 20% off. Just book your wedding suits before August 31st and get a whopping 20% off. Don't stand still. Evolve. Letterkenny Retail Park. Terms and conditions apply.
The 9 till noon show with Letterkenny Credit Union, now offering mortgages from 40,000 to 600,000 euro with no hidden fees or transaction charges. Letterkenny Credit Union, 9102127. The Community Garda information slot is brought to you by Sheridan Security Systems, protecting what you value most. Call today and get your zero wire alarm system from €299. Sheridan Security, 9126025.
Now, 22 minutes past 10 on this Tuesday, the 4th of July, 2023. Time for Community Garda information. And really pleased to welcome back onto the show Garda Sean Sweeney, attached to the Buncrana Garda Station. Hi, Sean. Great to have you on.
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Right, we'll get into it. It's a busy item today. And Gardaí, more information and reissuing an appeal as it relates to the alleged assault in Sleaf League last weekend.
Yeah, this investigation is continuing. The circumstances of the alleged assault that is reported have occurred in Sleaf League, Killybegs area, on Saturday the 24th and Sunday the 25th of June. So yesterday morning, Monday the 3rd, Gardaí, with the assistance of a Coast Guard, recovered a body from the water at Sleaf League. An incident room has now been established at Ballyshannon Garda Station under the direction of a senior investigating officer. So the investigating Gardaí continue to appeal to anybody who travelled in the area of Killybegs, Sleaf League, between the afternoon of Saturday 24th of June and the evening of Sunday 25th of June and observed any activity which drew their attention to come forward. We'd ask any road users who travel in these areas at those times who may have dashcam footage to make this available to Gardaí, and anyone with any information to contact Ballyshannon Garda Station on 07198 58530, the confidential line on 1800 666 111, or indeed any Garda station.
Now, an appeal as it relates to a burglary in Burnfoot, Sean.
Yes, occurred in the area of Tube in Burnfoot on Tuesday 27th June between the hours of 10 a.m. and 7 p.m. approximately. So, a Velocifero electric scooter was stolen from an unlocked shed of the property in that area between those times. The scooter in question is black in colour, with the word Velocifero and a small Italian flag on the body of it. This particular type of scooter is very distinctive. It has a seat and handlebars which can be removed to convert it to a skateboard. It also has very large wheels. So if anybody has any information in relation to the current location of the scooter or any other relevant information, we ask them to contact Buncrana on 07493 205 40. Again, the confidential line, 1800 666 111. And a picture of the stolen scooter will be posted on our Facebook page today.
All right, okay. As you say, really quite distinctive, and that will become apparent when that picture is posted. Okay, the public help being sought in relation to a burglary now in Carndonagh.
Yeah, this occurred at the business premises in the business park in Carndonagh in the early hours of Thursday the 29th of June at approximately 3:55 a.m. The glass side door of the business was smashed open with a brick. Two people entered the building and stole a quantity of confectionery. So we appeal to anybody who travelled in that area in the morning who has dash cam footage, make it available. And any relevant information, please contact Gardaí in Buncrana on 93205 40.
All right, now, investigations into criminal damage in Letterkenny.
Yeah, this occurred at Beechwood Road in Letterkenny Town between Monday the 26th of June at 6:30 p.m. and Tuesday the 27th of June at 1:30 p.m. A car was parked in that location between those times, and damage was caused to the driver's window, door and steering column. If anybody observed any suspicious activity, we asked them to make contact with Gardaí in Letterkenny on 9167 100.
All right, okay. Now we'll move on to criminal damage in the Greencastle area, I believe.
Yeah, this happened on the lower road, Struve Greencastle, between 11 p.m. on Wednesday the 28th of June and 6:30 a.m. on Thursday the 29th of June. The front of a house at that location was spray painted and a rear window was smashed. No entry was gained to the house. So we're appealing to anybody who may have observed any suspicious activity in that area between those times to contact Gardaí Buncrana, again, 93205 40, or the confidential line, 1800 666 111.
All right, and on that third criminal damage appeal, it's down to Letterkenny again.
Yeah, this occurred in Windmill View shortly after 3 a.m. on Sunday the 2nd of July. Male entered the driveway of a house in that area and he proceeded to smash the back windscreen of a car with a bottle. He then kicked the wing mirror off the car before leaving on foot. So again, we're appealing to anybody who may have travelled in that area whose dash cam footage to make it available and any relevant information to Gardaí and Letterkenny on 91671100.
Right, okay. Now, theft of tools, I believe, at Neil T. Blaney Road.
Yeah, this occurred between midnight and 1 a.m. on the morning of Wednesday, the 28th of June. A number of tools were stolen from a yard. This is located just off the Polestar roundabout across from the tourist office. The tools that were stolen include a Bell Orange whacker plate, a yellow rock breaker, a steel orange and white console. We appeal to anybody who may have noticed any sort of vehicle pull into that location between those times to make contact. Again, if anybody passed that area whose dashcam footage between midnight and 1 a.m, we ask them to make it available. And should anybody come across those tools for sale on a second-hand basis over the coming days or weeks, please alert Gardaí and Letterkenny on 91671100.
Yeah, because vehicular activity would not be unusual except for the time. So exactly. If it stood out in someone's mind, and as I say, you know, those are reasonably significant in size, those items.
Yes.
So it would take a bit of moving. All right, okay. Any information to Gardaí and Letterkenny, as you just heard from Sean there now. Theft of a van now in Inishowen.
Yeah, this was a blue Volkswagen. The partial registration of 06DL80. It was taken from Mintala, Ballymagan, Mokrana between 11 p.m. on Monday the 26th of June and 6:30 a.m. on Tuesday the 27th, at which time the van in question was located at Ned Point in Mokrana. Damage had been caused to the van and it was discovered abandoned on the slipway with the lights on by an early morning swimmer. We would like to hear from anybody who believes they may have observed this van been driven at any stage between those times. Again, anybody who's any relevant information to the theft or the criminal damage caused to this, we ask them to contact Gardaí Mokrana on 9320540.
All right, and a follow-up now in relation to an appeal from last week, Sean.
Yeah, this appeal is in relation to the theft of a vehicle from McMahon Villas in Letterkenny between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. on Tuesday the 27th of June. The car in question is a white Nissan March, registration of 162D28892. This vehicle was then located on fire in the area of College Farm Road in Letterkenny shortly after 9:30 a.m. on June the 27th. So if anybody travelled in the area of McMahon Villas between 1 a.m. and 5 a.m. on Tuesday the 27th, or in the area of College Farm Road between 8:30 a.m. and 9:30 a.m, you may have dash cam footage. We ask them to contact Gardaí and Letterkenny on 9167100.
All right, and there was some interesting information, important information as it relates to vehicles, what vehicles can be vulnerable or how you can protect your vehicle on the item last week. So well worth listening back to that if that's in relation to you. Right, okay, criminal damage in Bunkrana now.
Yeah, so each year artwork is erected for the Feel Good Fortnight yarn bombing around the town of Bunkrana. It's a much-loved annual event within Bunkrana town, and a massive amount of time and effort goes into making the event a success. As part of this event, a piece of artwork was placed around a tree beside the public library on St Mary's Road on the 24th of June, and sometime between then and the 29th of June, it was pulled down and discarded in the car park beside the library. It has been recovered, but has been damaged. If anybody has any information in relation to this incident, we ask them to please contact Gardaí Mokrana on 9320540.
Yeah, and look at all the appeals as victims, and we feel for them all. But particularly then when you get these instances that are feel like attacks on the community, it's particularly
exactly.
Sickening. Is that all of it, or is
there
one other
that's
item? Okay,
there,
that's
now.
It. So Grania has us both in check then.
She has.
So. All right, good stuff. Right, Sean, listen, thank you so much for your time. Thanks for calling in. It's greatly appreciated.
Much,
all right, that was Garda Sean Sweeney of the Bunkrana Garda Station, and that was Community Garda information for this Tuesday, the 4th of July, 2023. If you missed anything, of course, we'll be carrying the items in our news, but it'll also be available for you to rewatch back on our Facebook page and on Garda Síochána Cána Facebook page a little later on. And it's back with you live on the radio after 10 next Tuesday. Right, let's get to some of your comments as we welcome our next guest onto the programme. Or before we do, Greg, I'm just wondering, could the original plans of the houses affected not be secured from the original builders, even if they've gone out of business? This would reduce the need for additional architect fees, etc. That comes in from Barbara. Thanks for your suggestion, Barbara. A caller says, you cannot legally dump material with reactive iron sulphide minerals in landfill. DCC do not want to deal with this because of this. However, it is their responsibility. responsibility whether they like it or not. And I presume that's why they're going through the tendering process to get agents who will dispose of it in the correct manner. Now, Paul Watson is captain of the Paul Watson Foundation, an anti-poaching and anti-whaling strategist. Good morning to you, Paul.
Good morning.
It's amazing too. We've had sightings of certain whales off Ireland's coast at the moment. There was a really big whale in Donegal Bay here. We find them fascinating. We've got a great affinity with them, but they are greatly under threat still, aren't they? Hopefully not in our waters, but around the world.
Yes, whaling operations continue illegally, actually, in Japan, Norway, Iceland, and in the Danish Faroe Islands.
Which is heartbreaking, isn't it? Because they're such big, docile animals. And I mean that in a positive way. I'm not sure if it comes across as such. But why are whales illegally targeted like this?
The International Whaling Commission passed a moratorium on commercial whaling in 1986. It's still in effect, but Norway, Japan, and Iceland have consistently ignored that regulation. And Iceland is the most most concerned because they're hunting endangered fin whales. And so I don't understand exactly how they get away with this. There just seems to be a complete lack of enforcement on the part of international agencies or even in the European Union.
Now, the reason we invited you on is to discuss Iceland suspending its cruel whaling practices. I mean, can we take that on face value? Are they?
A few hours after we arrived in Icelandic waters, the Minister for Fisheries and Agriculture called a temporary ban on whaling, which is to go to August 31st. Christian Lawson, who's the probably the world's last remaining Captain Ahab type character, has an obsession with killing whales. So he intends to start going out on September 1st. It doesn't make any sense, really, because he could only kill whales for about 2 weeks before the season is no more. But I think he just wants to do it out of defiance more than anything else. But we're standing by, and if he does return at the end of August, then we'll be there in Iceland to meet him again.
You have a history with Iceland, don't you? Take us back to the mid-80s.
Well, in 1985, I went to Reykjavik and I told them that they had to abide by the international regulations, that is, the global moratorium on whaling. And if they didn't, that we would come back. And they didn't. They killed 96 whales in 1986. So we sank half their whaling fleet in Reykjavik Harbor, destroyed the whale processing plant and shut them down for a number of years.
What were the consequences of that?
Well, there were no consequences, really. I flew to Reykjavik on January of 1988, and I said, you've been saying that this is a crime. It's an eco-terrorism, they called it. I said, so here I am. What are the charges? They took me into interrogation, and they said, are you admitting to sinking these ships? I said, yes, we did, and we're going to sink the other two at the first opportunity. And they escorted me to the airport, told me to kick me out of the country. There were no charges. And says they knew that to put me on trial would be to put Iceland on trial for their illegal activities. I remember the justice minister saying, who does he think he is? He comes into our country and demands to be arrested. Get him out of here. So, there were no consequences. So as far as I'm concerned, if there was no charges, no trial, no conviction, there was no crime.
And with that in mind, I suppose you fired shots across the bow with a threat for more action. If laws aren't complied to, I was going to say if your demands aren't heeded, but I mean, effectively, this comes down to laws not being broken.
If Lawson goes whaling at the end of August, he's still in violation of the International Whaling Commission's regulations on commercial whaling. He may be able to get approval there in Iceland. He's trying to actually overturn the decision and even threatening to have the minister fired. He's threatening to recruit 32 members of parliament to overturn the ban. That could happen, and we're only a few days away if it does happen. But right now we're focusing in on the end of August as the possibility that he might return.
You've also offered to buy them out, effectively, the remaining ships. An interesting move again as well.
Well, their boats really have no use if they're not whaling. So if the ban becomes permanent, then he'll have to do something with those boats. I don't think he'll sell them to us, but we certainly put the offer in for them.
And I presume, do we know what the Icelandic people's views are on all of this? Sometimes we can live in a country, even if it's engaged in such activity, in blissful ignorance. Do you know what I mean? I wonder, is this high on the agenda of Icelandic people, this issue?
Very much so. In fact, about over 50% of the people of Iceland are opposed to this. Whale watching has become a very lucrative industry in Iceland, and so people prefer to do that. The whale meat is 95% of it is being sold to the Japanese, and the whale meat that is sold in restaurants in Reykjavik are primarily to American and European tourists. Really, you know, the Icelanders don't really eat it anymore. So the older generation probably supports it, but younger Icelanders are pretty much against it.
All right, finally, just to remind us, where are we at then? So what is the status of this disagreement, and when is the deadline? What might happen next?
The temporary ban is till August 31st, so the possibility is that Christian Lofsen would resume whaling on September 1st, and we'll be ready if he does. There's also the possibility he could overturn the decision if he managed to get enough votes in Parliament to overturn that decision and fire the Minister of Agriculture. She took a very courageous stand in making this temporary ban, and you know, they called to a meeting. There were 200 angry people in this room, you know, attacking her, calling her names. And at the end, she said, I think it was a very good meeting. But she's standing her ground on this.
And finally, Paul, this must be your life's work. You must be dedicating pretty much all of your time and presumably significant resources to protect these mammals.
Yes, I started, opposing whaling in 1974, and we made a lot of progress. During that time, we shut down whaling operations in Australia, in Spain, in Chile, in South Africa, shut down all the pirate whaling operations that were in the Atlantic. I hunted down and rammed the pirate whaler Sierra off of Portugal in 79 and permanently ended its career. So it's been a lifelong thing. My lifelong ambition is to eradicate whaling, just to stop the killing of whales completely. And I would say that 90% of the job is done.
All right. Are you on a boat as we speak?
Yes, we're actually in the harbor off of Killybegs in Ireland. We just got refueled and we're heading up to the Faroe Islands.
And I'm just up the road from you here. Okay. Hopefully you're able to disembark and enjoy beautiful Killybegs.
Oh, we did. We had a couple of days there. It was very nice. I had to get my crew back on the ship, so keep them out of the pub.
Round them up. There may be a few sore heads. Okay, well, there's a couple of local chemists as well, Paul, if you need anything to assist in that regard. All right, safe onward journeys towards the Faroe Islands. Thank you very much for your time. I do appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
Safe sailing. Okay, thank you very much indeed. Captain Paul Watson, who is on his vessel, docked at Killybegs there. Right, we ask you about, there's a consultation on at the moment as it relates to passports. The caller says, hi Greg, relating to the passport, how many choices for gender are there? But you see, it's nothing like that. You know, I do understand how we kind of try and get all these stuff into the big issues of the day. It's about it's about squirrels and St. Patrick's cabbage and stuff. I don't think there's any. I don't know if what does the heart represent that's a problem with it? Maybe I'm ignorant to history. I don't know. I'm not ignorant to all history, but the history of this. A caller says all passports could have the flag of whichever or whatever country issued them as covers. Yeah, you could do that, all right. Let me see. With respect to the reps from the Mica Action Group, there is absolutely no point in promoting a scheme which does not include the foundations and clearly is not 100% redress. Who in the right mind would build upon a foundation which almost certainly contains defective materials and will inevitably crumble due to damage from groundwater? They should be rallying the people to begin the protests and not let up until 100% is achieved, like that received in the Pyrite scheme and that recently given to the apartments, one of which Leo Varadkar might have an interest in. Yes, indeed, that is the big problem. And I'm already getting messages and texts in saying people with 3,200 square metered or foot houses, they're getting bills or quotes for 650, 700,000. And there are families in, you know, mid to late 40s, three or four kids in some cases, They'll have to find €300,000. They're saying, well, where are we going to get that? Who's going to give us that mortgage? How long might we be paying that mortgage? How could we afford to pay such a mortgage? Again, hopefully over time we'll sort of get to the point where we can understand who actually might be able to get away with using, with availing of the scheme. I don't know. I'm asking people who know better than I their views on it. So I'm not saying the scheme is a pile of you-know-what. I don't know, because currently I'm not a... Anyway, all I'm saying is it remains to be seen from the people who know more than this than I might if this is a good or workable scheme. Okay, back with our next guest very shortly. Okay, good morning, Annie, Paul, Cam in New Zealand, Charlie, May, Kira, Barbara, another Mary, Bernie, Charlie, another Charlie, all of you, Siobhan, good morning to you. All watching across our social media, and you'll be able to watch our interview hopefully later on with Father Sean Doherty. We appreciate it. Just to remind you how you can watch with us. If it suits you, you know, if you're at home or whatever it might be, you can watch us on your big screen if you want on YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland. Most smart TVs now have, most people have smart TVs, and most have the YouTube app, and you can watch us on your Fire Stick as well, across our Facebook pages, Highland Radio News and Sport or Highland Hub. Okay, now, the term obesity should be renamed to change the way the disease is talked about. Changing the name would help the public, we're told, and policymakers understand what the condition is and how to treat it. Now, you would know, we've spoken to many professionals from the local hospital here and elsewhere who have been fighting for us to have the conversation that obesity is indeed a disease, and maybe changing the name might get a better understanding of that. Dr. Margaret Steele is a postdoctoral researcher in UCC's School of Public Health and joins us now. Thank you very much, Doctor, for joining us. Good morning.
Hi, nice to be here. Thank you.
How would changing the terminology, do you think, assist in the conversation, Margaret?
Well, I think it really is against the backdrop of what you just said there about, you know, the push to understand obesity as a chronic disease. And that's, you know, really the consensus among doctors and patients and people living with the condition. But the problem is that, I suppose, in our culture, the word obesity is kind of already taken, and it refers to high BMI, or it might just be seen as kind of a euphemism for fat, really. So the problem with that is that that's really not the essence of the disease, because, you know, you can be heavy, you can be in a higher in a bigger body and not have the disease, and you can be reasonably slim and still have the disease. And I suppose we want to put across that distinction that it's not that everyone above a certain BMI threshold has a disease.
So outside of weight,
when we're saying obesity is a disease.
Sorry, Dr. Steele. Outside of weight, then, how do you describe the disease of obesity? Right. So, because as you say quite rightly, people will associate it instantly with someone who's a bigger size. So, how is obesity diagnosed if we aren't talking about weight specifically? Then.
Well, I mean, weight can be a factor, of course, right? If you have the disease, there's a reason it's confusing, and there's a reason these terms are tangled up. So very often a patient who has the disease will present with a high weight, but it's really a question of why are they at a higher weight? Because if it's a case that they're constantly feeling hungry, if it's a case that they find it physically uncomfortable to eat the suggested portion of a food, say, if they just do that and they still feel hungry all the time, if they find it really difficult to ignore a cue to eat, so like when they see a food ad, it really grabs their attention, there's a possibility that what's going on there is something not really in the fat cells, but something in the brain originally, that they're genetically vulnerable at the level of neurochemistry to overeating, and not just to kind of that they get to a higher weight in adulthood and they just kind of stay there, but that they're continually gaining weight and they're not really able to change their behavior because their behavior is being determined at a brain level. It's below the level at which we kind of have any free will or self-control,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I get you. Right, so, I mean, it's going to take a while to sort of change public attitudes and all that type of stuff, of course, but I'm just wondering from a professional perspective, as I say, I'm speaking to you, Dr. Steele, now, and you explain it very clearly. We've had, as I mentioned before, consultants up from Letterkenny over, I've spoken to them over many years, that are really trying to get this point across. So does the health service or health services need to change its approach to treating obesity, and we'll get to what it might be called alternative, as a disease? Do you know what I mean? Is it a group of individuals like yourself and other like-minded, or is it across the health service? In other words, like, we might have an action plan for cancer or an action plan for dementia or whatever it might be. Do we, in an organised way within the health service, treat obesity as a disease and have a plan and finances and the expertise to deal with that, to make people better?
We have a plan. So there are national clinical guidelines for treating obesity that came out earlier this year or last year. We have an obesity policy action plan at a national level for prevention, you know, that's looking at the food environment and different factors that might contribute to triggering those mechanisms in the people who are vulnerable. But what we don't have is maybe sufficient funding in certain areas. So there's a lot of people, you know, my co-author on this paper, Francis Finucane, is an endocrinologist. He'd be working in bariatric services and probably faces a lot of the same challenges that those clinicians you spoke to from Letterkenny would be facing, where, you know, it's very difficult to get medication for a patient with obesity. It might be difficult to get surgery, even if it's a really, seems like a very clear case that a person was likely to benefit from a medical point of view. The funding just wouldn't be there. I think the situation is improving.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to be the case that the HSE and various government departments, and especially I think doctors and patients and public health people, like, are all becoming more and more aware of this. So I think the impetus is there and the will is there, but maybe the funding is a little bit lacking on the treatment side. And then I do think we're still lagging a bit behind where we need to be on the prevention side too, which is, of course, a whole different area.
But on that, I can't think of another disease whereby it's actively in the media and through companies like antiperspirant companies or whatever it might be, where and I understand where it comes from, but I can't think of any other disease, particularly one that can be life-limiting and deadly and what have you, where it's enabled or encouraged through sort of like a body positive movement, if you understand where I'm coming from. And I've mentioned this on the program before, and apologies to people who think I have an axe to grind. I certainly don't. But I'm just thinking from someone within the medical professional, you know, it does seem to be that people, you're saying, look, at there might be something here in your brain that we need to work with to try and get you to a healthy weight or a healthy BMI or whatever it might be. But there is, and you sit down and watch any adverts or open up a newspaper or what have you, and as I say, I can't think of another disease where people might be able to watch ads or read articles that says, actually, you know, the doctors are wrong. I should be what I want to be and be happy in my skin. How do you square that circle?
Well, I suppose that's partly why I think it might be helpful to give the disease a different name. Because if you put on an ad for antiperspirant and there's somebody ice skating and they're fat or they're in a bigger body or whatever, however people want to say that, like, there's no reason to assume that that person has the disease of obesity. They may not.
I know, but it's how that might be interpreted. I do understand exactly what you're coming from, and I don't want to sound like I'm actually judging people, because I'm on about the what it might create in the viewer's mind.
Well, I suppose when you're saying something about like promoting obesity, I mean, first of all, you have to think of what it's a reaction to. It's a reaction to decades of complete fat shaming, where nobody in a bigger body was depicted as anything other than the butt of the joke.
Yeah, true.
So, you know, people aren't going to suddenly see one model who's, you know, slightly bigger body and go, oh, okay, it's okay to be fat. Other thing is that, like, that kind of assumes that people are making decisions around this stuff, that people are deciding, I want to be skinny or I want to be fat, and I'm going to take the actions to pursue that. And that might be true in a certain sense, but over the long term, most people really are not able to control their weight just by how they choose to eat and exercise.
I get you.
You know, sometimes like you'd hear the thing of, oh, some people, their weight is genetic, right? But really, strictly speaking, all of our weight is genetic. Mm-hmm. Everybody's weight is kind of predetermined to be within a certain range. And the environment then is either going to kind of facilitate that by giving you lots of food so you can eat as much as your body tells you you need, or it's going to resist it by there not being enough food in the environment. But the bottom line is that doesn't have that much to do with the disease in a sense. Because really, I think what we want to get across is the disease is about quality, not quantity.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the amount of fat you have. It's not about the amount you eat. It's about, you know, how is your body handling that fat?
Can
is your
more,
body
people,
able
you
to can store
be,
it?
You can you not be predisposed, though, to obesity?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So you
can be predisposed to the disease as well as to higher weight. So you can be predisposed to either kinds of obesity, yeah.
Okay, so then it's coming up with an alternative terminology, though, because, you know, it can't be, because we've had it with different things that are changed to more simpler, more easier to understand words or phrases. So, you know, what might be a better way of referring to it that can change how we talk about it?
Well, one possibility would be to use a term that was proposed by some groups of endocrinologists a few years ago. They suggested ABCD, adiposity-based chronic disease, and that would be a way of distinguishing the disease mm-hmm. from body size. I'm not saying that's definitely the best option, but it's one possibility that's been floated. I think anything that helps people to understand that what's being treated when a person, say, takes semaglutide or goes to a bariatric clinic, it's not the fact that they're fat.
Mm-hmm.
The goal from a medical point of view is not to make them thin. In fact, it's very rare that somebody actually undergoes treatment for medical, you know, chronic severe obesity and actually ends up skinny, because that's not the goal.
And Dr. Steele, I suppose too.
That's not really the problem.
Conversations like this, even us talking about the possibility of how we refer to it, I think are really useful. Like, I'm listening to you. And, you know, maybe I had views or, you know, but they're changing. Do you know what I mean? I feel I'm getting a better understanding. The way you've explained certain things to me, I think, has given me a better understanding of how I might approach conversations like this going forward. Do you know that sort of way? So I think whilst we're talking about it as well in this type of way, where it's not about shaming anyone or not shaming anyone or anything, I think this is these kind of conversations too are really, or I find them really useful. I presume you do too, Doctor, or you wouldn't engage in them.
I do.
you know what
I'm
I mean?
Biased, like, obviously.
Yeah, of course. But I just think it gives us all a better understanding. I really appreciate your time, Margaret. Thanks so much for joining us. And as I say, I found it very informative, which is good for me. All right. Thanks very much, Dr. Margaret Steele.
Thanks so much.
Take care of yourself. Dr. Steele is a postdoctoral researcher in UCC's School of Public Health. 086 60 25000. That's a WhatsApp and text number. From the North or outside the Republic, 00353 86 60 25000. A caller says Captain Paul is brilliant. We need him to save Atlantic salmon too. I approach that interview like with caution, going, oh, you can't. Can you really say that you'll take ships out that are involved in whaling? It's like, well, we did it in the 80s. We'll do it again. The Icelandic people, the authorities couldn't do anything about it because they didn't want a trial about their whaling practices. And he's getting in the boat out of Killybegs and heading to the Faroe Islands, then on to Iceland. And he says, I'll buy the boats or I'll sink them. Crazy. He's not crazy, but it's just crazy to be having that conversation. You know what I mean? It's just so out in front.